The Apollo 13 crew was in deep, deep trouble.
Their lunar module was made for two guys for maximum 3 days, and now they got three guys for 4 days. Things were running out before we got back.
Houston, we have a problem. Charlie Duke was one of the astronauts who sped to mission control to deal with the emergency. Duke talked with producer Dave Fisher about the problem and how they solved it. Here's part one of our exclusive interview in today's edition of Truth in the Test Tube.
General Duke, where were you when millions of people around the world were shocked by those famous words, "Houston, we have a problem"?
Well, I was home. That was 10 o'clock or so at night, and my wife and I were getting ready for bed. The phone rang, and it was John Young, said, "They got a problem. They've had an explosion. Let's go to Mission Control." We went off to Mission Control. John and Ken Mattingly and I, who were now the backup crew for the Apollo 13, and we were there for 35 hours. We had to get the procedures developed so that they could get back on what's called a free return, activate the lunar module, use it as a lifeboat. And so we were very busy for 35 hours.
Jack Lazma said that there was never a thought whether we succeed or not. It's going to happen.
Well, Jack was probably a little bit more optimistic than I was. I was looking at the consumption of what we call consumables in the lunar module, oxygen, cooling water, drinking water, electrical power, those kind of things. Their lunar module was made for two guys for maximum 3 days, and now they got three guys for 4 days. So you look at all the consumption at the power level we had, things were running out before we got back. And so I was very pessimistic at first. We don't have enough stuff. But once we started back around from the moon and we started powering down, learning how to manage what was necessary, what wasn't necessary, what can we turn off, all of those kind of decisions, then that usage of oxygen, electrical power leveled off, so we weren't running out until after reentry. That if we don't make a mistake in mission control and they don't make a mistake up in among the crew, we got enough stuff to get back. And sure enough, we did.
Didn't they use the gravitation of the moon to?
That's right, they did. When you get to the moon, you're going too fast to go into orbit. So what it does is whip you around the moon, and the moon's gravity propels you back towards the Earth. Before we got to the moon, though, we had to get them on what was called free return trajectory, which meant if they didn't do anything as they whipped around the moon, it would take them back to the Earth. And so that maneuver we did before we got to the moon, and they whipped around and started home. We made one or two little corrections, if I remember, on the way home. But now they were at least headed back to Earth. We used the lunar gravity to whip us back towards Earth. And every Apollo would do that if you didn't burn your engine to slow down and go into orbit.
Okay. Got it. So it was your turn when Apollo 16 came along.
Right.
What was that experience like of walking on the lunar surface?
Well, it was very exciting. My emotional high was like a little kid at Christmas, I guess, bounding down the stairs and opening the door, and there's presents and all the other stuff. Incredibly beautiful. Though the moon doesn't have much color other than shades of gray, but you just kept thinking, you know, nobody's ever been here before. And we're seeing this for the first time up close, and we can reach out and touch it. There was a sharp contrast between the lunar surface and the blackness of space. Very vivid. And the moon was very, very bright from the reflected sunlight. Surprisingly, I felt right at home. It was just a sense of belonging, even though it was a very hostile environment.
Somebody called it magnificent desolation.
Buzz Aldrin did. He's got a book out by that name. And he actually did say that as he was coming down the ladder, magnificent desolation. It's a vivid description. It's exactly what it looked like. It's magnificent in beauty and yet desolate.
Yet surprisingly, a man who had walked on the moon stumbled badly when he got back to Earth. What tripped you up?
Well, I think it was the fact that I had looked to my own wisdom and abilities and success to meet all my needs. I got back, and I was 36 years old. So January of 1973, Apollo's over, and the thought occurred to me, what are you going to do now? Because that drive that took me to the moon was still there.
No more worlds to conquer.
Yeah, no more worlds to conquer, at least not in the space program that I could visualize. And so I was successful in my career as an astronaut, as a test pilot, military officer, but I wasn't doing too well as a husband and a father. That stress that was in our marriage from my focus of being so career-oriented and my wife's problem of me being her God. You know, she'd put me number one in her life, and I'm not God. She wanted to live Cinderella story, you know, happily ever after. And marriage is tough. And so I was traveling, and I had all of this career pressures. And with Apollo, the things just got really, really bad at home. I was also a military drill instructor dad. When I went to the moon, my boys were, one had just turned 7, and the other was coming up on 5. And I demanded instant obedience. You know that have got 5-year-olds, they don't always give you instant obedience. And so I had an explosive temper back then, and it all would go off. I can't say I was ever depressed from this fact that the drive that took me to the moon was still there. I was always optimistic. Something else will come along, and I'll channel this energy and drive that I had. And it did. I was just hoping that my marriage and family tensions would be alleviated, and they were several years later due to the transition of my wife becoming a born-again Christian.
Now, do you think that the stresses of your career were what caused it, or does spaceflight make a person vulnerable?
Not so much more in any other career, but you know, I've learned now that in my life and the life of my wife, our focus was wrong. I was looking to my career to meet all these needs, that if I just reach this level, if I just do this, everything's going to be great. And whereas my wife put me first in her life, all of that was the problem. It wasn't whether I was in a space program or whether I was in private business, or whether, because later on I was in private business making money, and that didn't work either.
Okay. So many celebrities are harmed by fame and glamour. Why do you think that is?
Like some of us, they look at, if I can just get famous and if I can just be good-looking and charming and all, then the whole world will flock to me and I'll be happy. But it never works. Fame and fortune or glamour are not God. We focus on the created things and the tangible things rather than the spiritual part of life. And that's where I was off balance. So mind, body were in good shape, but the spiritual leg of my life, that soul side, if you will, was bankrupt. While I believed in God, and I was regular attendance in church, and had been baptized and confessed Jesus and the creeds and all of that stuff, that was just empty words. I ended up going to church, but after I'd walk out of church, God would never even enter my mind hardly until the next Sunday. So I was in charge of my life and trying to satisfy this drive that I had. And I was very successful at accomplishing things, but it was always something missing in my life. I discovered in 1978 that it was Jesus that I was really missing.
Now, you said that your wife got straightened out with the Lord before you did?
That's correct. We were active in our church in LaPorte, Texas. And one of the ministries they have in the Episcopal Church is called Faith Alive. And it's an evangelical ministry. A team comes to your church on a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they just share their stories. Let me tell you what God did for me. So everybody gets a chance to share their stories. And I was there that weekend, and I got to admit, they had a love and a joy and a peace that I know I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And Dottie saw it vividly, and she had tried everything for happiness and purpose, career, a little bit of marijuana, social work, church, and she was on the verge of suicide because primarily her marriage wasn't what she thought it should be. Anyway, after that weekend was over, she said, Lord, I've tried everything but you, Jesus, if you're real, I give you my life. If you're not, I want to die. Well, there really is a God. His name's Jesus, and he came into her life. And she didn't even tell me about this for a couple of months. But I began to notice a change in her, and I watched her change from sadness to joy over the next 6 months or so. In fact, now she's written a little booklet, From Sadness to Joy, The Story of an Astronaut Wife. It was amazing. About that time, I was leaving the space program to go make my millions, thinking millions would give me satisfaction and peace. And I was a very successful businessman, but I didn't find any real peace in business. I had 42 people working for me, and you know, I had to meet payrolls and, you know, manage and all that stuff, so it took a lot of hours. But my wife, Dottie, never complained. She all just loved me. It was an amazing change in her attitude, and as she became a deeper believer and a deeper walk with Jesus.
So at the meetings, it wasn't so much what anybody said as the sense of peace and joy that you discovered.
And they were saying it was all on account of Jesus, that Jesus had given them purpose, Jesus had filled them with love, Jesus had given them peace in their life. In spite of all the problems that they faced, Jesus was there and was their help. I mean, it wasn't preachy. It was just testimony. She just realized, I've tried everything but Jesus. Lord, come into my life. And then he began to show himself through answered prayers and a reality of his presence, and that she could experience peace and purpose in life. She didn't have any purpose in her life, really. You know, what is the purpose of life? If life is so mean and disappointing and hurtful and sorrowful, and if there's no future, why live any longer? Get it over with. Mm-hmm. And that's why she had thoughts of suicide. She never attempted it, but she had thoughts. Because she'd gone from despair to depression. She didn't go to a psychiatrist, but if she had, she'd probably be clinically depressed is the diagnosis. But Jesus delivered her from all that. She says Jesus became her psychiatrist, and she really changed.
We'll hear the conclusion of our interview with lunar astronaut Charlie Duke next time. Meanwhile, remember that you can hear dozens of programs on various topics of science and how they relate to God and the Bible by simply Googling Truth in the Test Tube or by checking us out on TWR360's website, www.twr360.org. Go to www.twr360.org and search for Truth in the Test Tube. We always welcome your comments and suggestions. You can contact us at truthtest@truthinthetesttube.org. I'm Denny Milgate, inviting you to share more of Astronaut Duke's out-of-this-world experiences on the next Truth in the Test Tube.